One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai. Kosai.org.
Hey guys, it's Elena.
And it's Candace.
And you're listening to Cousins on Crime.
This
is Canis.
It's so funny. I get called things all the time, but I just called myself Canis. Like, I can't even talk.
Hey, I get called Eleanor.
Eleanor?
I do.
Really?
Yeah. Thanks, Eleanor. Oh, no, that's not what I said my name is.
That ain't even it.
Yeah, all kinds of things. Elaine.
No.
So I just answered it, whatever people call me, it's honestly.
Okay. Yeah. Kansas, I've been called.
No, you haven't.
Yeah,
no.
I have like a whole photo album of the ways people have written my name. K-A-N-D-I-S-S.
Okay.
Canvas.
I've
C-A-N-V-A-S. Like,
what?
I know. It's really not that
I mean,
hard.
There are some strange names out there.
I've also been called Hannah, and it's like, that's nowhere, like at Starbucks, they've written Hannah on my cup and I'm like, yeah, that's not even close. So anyway, funny.
I've been called Hillary.
Hillary.
You know that story.
Hillary.
Not because I told them my name was Elena said, oh, okay, it's Hillary. No, somebody thought I was their friend's daughter, Hillary. That's a funny story.
Oh my goodness.
Anyway, so that's. Yeah. Okay.
Well, what do you got for us, Tedzai?
Okay. Well, today we're going to get right into it.
Let's do it.
We're talking about Gail Katz.
Okay.
She was born in Brooklyn, New York, on March 8th of 1956. Her parents were Manny and Sylvia. Manny was an advertising executive and Sylvia was a homemaker. When Gail was 9 years old and her younger sister, Elaine, was 7, the family moved to Long Island.
Okay.
She would later get a younger brother, Stephen, but they were just, you know, growing up in New York and living the life.
Mm-hmm.
So Gail, she made straight A's. She was really smart.
God, it's always the good ones. Mm,
I know it. She sounded like a really, just a sweetheart.
Yeah.
But even still, she was said to be insecure.
Oh.
And this attributed to the way that she was treated by her father.
Oh.
It was said that her dad would hold in his emotions and then he would yell and scream to just get it all out. But she ended up graduating in 1973 and went to college at State University of Albany. She chose this college partly because her boyfriend was going there.
Okay.
But shortly after, the two of them broke up.
Oh, no.
And she quit college.
Oh, man.
Yeah, she didn't really have a set foundation other than, you know,
yeah,
that's where
she's like, I just came here for you and...
Wow. Yeah, so there's nothing here for
Girls,
me now.
Don't follow a boy to school.
Yeah, don't do it. She was known to go from one relationship to the next.
Insecurity.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not good enough.
Yeah, always looking for that one.
Validation.
Yeah. So she would jump into each relationship and it always seemed intense and like a deep.
So like Jennifer Lopez.
Okay, if you will.
Yeah, always getting engaged, always getting married, and then always falling in love. And okay,
why does she do that?
Oh. Mm. She's a case study.
Yeah. But yeah, she would hold on to these guys. Mm-hmm. And but eventually these relationships would end.
Yeah.
After attending a little bit of college, she moved to an apartment in Manhattan with a boyfriend.
Oh.
He was a rock musician.
Oh.
And she started as working as a bartender at a bar called Tracks, which is, I think, a bar where he would play.
Okay.
Manny and Sylvia were not pleased with the choices that Gail was making. They wanted a better future for their daughter.
They're like, a musician, really?
Yeah. Like, you were going to college. You were doing so good. But yeah, this, you know, sometimes we just take
a
turn.
Sometimes we do.
In 1979, at the age of 23, Gail was single, and she felt the consequences of making these bad choices and felt that she just was in a bad place. She, at this time in her life, she attempted suicide.
No, Gail.
Yeah. It didn't work. I don't know how she did it, but that doesn't really matter. Mm-hmm. She went through a year of psychiatric therapy, and she got her life back on track.
Good.
In 1981, she started working as a receptionist at a graphic design firm.
Well, there you go.
A lot more settled.
Yeah, that's like really profesh.
Yeah.
Very grown up.
Yeah, I like it. Mm-hmm. Later that year, a friend introduced her to Dr. Robert Bierenbaum.
All right.
He went by Bob. He was 26 years old.
Wow.
He was Jewish, and he had a lot going for him. Mm-hmm. A bright future ahead. I mean, as I said, he was a doctor, and he spoke multiple languages.
Wow.
And he knew how to fly planes.
No.
Yeah. 26 years
old. Doogie Howser? Is that you?
On one of their first dates, he took her for a ride in the plane.
Okay. Gail.
Mm.
Gail, sweetie.
Mm-hmm.
This girl's impulsive. I would never get in a plane with a guy on a first date. Are you kidding me?
I know, it was actually said that he took a lot of his first dates on a ride on the airplane.
Right, but I mean...
And they all went willingly. Hey, I mean, this is fun.
I mean, it is impressive, yeah. I will say, but like, that freaks me out.
Yeah, but I know. A guy that you barely know...
is going to fly me? Yeah. Hey, listen, every flight I get on, I don't know the pilot, so there's that.
Yeah, you trust somebody.
In saying that, like... I trust a complete stranger to get me there.
Hey, I say a prayer and I trust God to get
Lord,
me where.
Oh, take me above the clouds. I just wrote that song. I'm going to perform that at my American Idol audition.
Okay. See, so. I'm helping you out
anyway,
here.
Anyway, Gail, she's flying in the plane.
Yeah. Now, Bob, friends say, excelled at everything he did.
Mm-hmm.
He would show his algebra teacher how to do calculus.
Oh.
His father was a well-known cardiologist.
Okay.
So he was privileged, but also he was expected to do great things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When Gail met Bob, she fell hard.
Mm-hmm.
In the spring of 1982, the couple were planning to get married. Around this time, Bob became very controlling.
Oh, no.
He told her how to wear her hair.
Yikes.
What clothes he wanted her to wear.
No.
He didn't like that she smoked cigarettes, and he told her to quit. Which, I mean, he's a doctor.
Ain't nobody gonna be prying my cigarettes out of my hand when I start smoking.
Girl. So 3 weeks before the wedding, Gail came home to find Bob trying to strangle their cat.
Oh my gosh.
He was holding the cat under the water in the toilet bowl, strangling the cat. And she's like, what are you doing?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So she called her sister and she's like freaking out. This is what I just witnessed. And Elaine tried to get Gail not to marry Bob. She's like,
Yeah.
Elaine's like, we're going to get.
Pack a bag. I'm coming right now. Like,
yeah. And so she's like, oh. You got to go. But Gail told Elaine, we're just going to get rid of the cat and then everything's going to be fine.
Yeah. He was trying to do such a thing. He was trying to get rid of the cat.
Right.
What? We'll get rid of the cat.
Yeah.
Like
she says, everything's going to be fine.
If we don't have a cat, he can't murder it. What?
Yeah. But then she also says, everything's going to be fine. He's going to believe that I love him.
What? Oh, it's that insecurity. The insecurity,
but she was trying to prove that she could
stand by him.
Yeah. So Elaine told her, no, not really. You really have to get rid of Bob, not right. The cat. And Gail told her sister, I'm smart. I'm loving. My love will cure. This is going to work out.
Oh, that's ominous.
Oh, bless her heart. She went through with the wedding on October 29th, 1982. She wore her mother-in-law's wedding dress.
Okay.
To please Bob and his family.
Okay.
The newlywed, and it was gorgeous on her. I mean, yeah. She made a beautiful bride. It looked great on her. Mm-hmm. But the newlyweds moved into a luxury apartment in New York and Gail started college again.
Okay.
You know, Bob's like,
maybe he was like, you need to get an education.
Yeah.
Like,
if you're going to be with me, yeah. You got to be great.
If you're going to be on my arm.
Mm. So she went to college for a degree in psychology.
Okay.
Bob was working 36-hour shifts, and so when he got off work and went home, he would detox by sitting in front of the computer for hours,
mm-hmm.
not spending time with his new wife.
Right.
Gail was heartbroken that she didn't get to see her husband for all these long hours, and then he wouldn't talk to her when he was home. One day, he came home early from a shift and saw Gail standing on the balcony smoking a cigarette.
Oh, God forbid.
Yeah. This enraged him. He leaped over the couch and charged outside. He grabbed her by the throat and she fell to the ground.
Gosh.
Yes. And he kept strangling her until she lost consciousness.
Oh, my gosh. Dude, because this is the cat all over again.
Right?
He's like out of control.
Yeah. Well, we all know they start with the animal.
Yeah.
And here we are.
Yeah.
So Gail did go to the police. She awoke.
Good.
She went to the police and made a report on her husband.
I'm surprised she did.
Right?
But like, good.
Yeah. And she demanded that he get psychiatric help.
Yeah.
They did go to therapy together with a Dr. Michael Stone. Now, Dr. Stone commented that Dr. Birnbaum was a psychopath.
Yeah.
And was not treatable. He actually said in his reports he is not treatable.
Wow.
Dr. Stone also said that Gail had a syndrome in which she was attracted to danger. Mm. I mean, she got into this plane. Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. He told Gail that if she stayed with Bob, that she would be risking her life. Her response to him was, a woman's place is by her husband's side. Gail, who told you that? No. I mean, yeah. If
her
husband
told her that.
If their husband is not a psychopath.
Right.
Dr. Stone wrote a letter to Gail basically telling her that his recommendation was that she leave Bob.
Yeah. Here's my prescription.
Here you go. So the letter read, if I do not heed this advice, I must accept the consequences, including the possibility of personal injury or death at the hands of my husband. And Dr. Stone asked her to sign the letter.
Wow. That, can I just say, mm-hmm. that's amazing.
Right?
Because I feel like sometimes doctors are so woke. Mm-hmm. Like, they're trying to really, oh, I can't say things in that way. I can't offend. I don't want to get sued. You know, right. You can't say that to a patient. But this guy was like, I'm going to write this down and you're going to sign it.
Well, he knew in his
gut.
He knew
how serious this was.
Yeah.
Wow. Did she sign it?
No. She never did sign the letter.
Oh, Gail.
She would hold on to the letter for some time. Mm. She waited until she graduated college a year later in 1984 before she told anyone about this letter from Dr. Stone.
Did her husband know about the letter?
No.
Oh, my Lord. Where did she hide this thing? Like, I can't imagine the wrath if he would have found it.
I know.
Oh, my.
And at this time, she talked to her sister and told her that she was considering divorce.
Well, don't talk to your sister if you're not going to take her advice. We've been down this road again.
Yeah. She thought for sure that since she had this letter, that Bob would settle in a divorce agreement.
Wow.
As long as she did not expose the letter and psychiatric dysfunction, she's like, I'm going to present it and say, hey, I've got this letter. So if you don't meet my request, like, everybody's going to know that you're a psychopath.
Yeah.
And you won't be able to be a doctor anymore, basically.
Whoa. Did he like fly off the handle?
Well, yeah, he was mad.
yeah, he did.
They fought about it for sure. She was afraid that he would kill her if she tried to leave him or if he found out that she was having an affair.
Gail.
I know.
Gail.
So, yeah, for the first time in a very long time, she was finally happy with another man.
Someone else.
Yeah. So it wasn't until July 1985 when things came to a head, got worse.
Yeah.
July 6th, she told him that she wanted this divorce and showed him the letter and gave him a list of demands.
Wow. By this point, she is fed up because I'm seeing a courage in her that has been lost for a long time.
Exactly.
Wow. Go, Gail.
But to try to be that wife that, you know, she made these vows and trying to stick with them.
Yeah.
And then she's like, no, I can't do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so she presented the letter to him, said, this is what I have from Dr. Stone. Anyway, July 7th, the next day, they fought all night.
Oof.
Well, that's what was said. They fought all night. July 7th at 6:30 p.m., Bob went to his nephew's birthday party. Well, Gail was not with him. He told them that she stayed back at home. When he got home that night, he called Gail's parents and asked if they knew where Gail was. He told them that they had a fight the day before and she left the apartment to cool off and he hadn't seen her since. Bob let 36 hours go by before he went to the police station to report Gail missing.
No.
Detective Tom O'Malley commented on how calm Bob was. Mm. He didn't seem bothered that his wife was missing.
I'm getting Robert Durst vibes right now from this guy.
Yeah. Detective O'Malley even told Elaine that he's like, I don't like this Bob guy. And he just felt a bad vibe from him. Gail's family and friends already knew that what the marriage was like. Mm-hmm. They met every day at Gail's apartment to hand out missing person flyers all around the area. In the apartment, Sylvia found Gail's purse with her keys, her pocketbook, a pack of cigarettes, all still in it. Okay, so if she left, how? Did she go walking? Okay, I'll go walking.
Sure.
To cool off, sure. But why would she not take her keys with her so she
something.
Could... Or her cigarettes to, you know...
Shoot. If I'm going for a walk, I'm taking my pack of smokes.
So yeah, nothing. She didn't take anything with her. What was Bob doing while they were doing all of this? Rummaging, looking through their apartment.
Was he on the computer?
I don't know what he was doing, but he was he was not helping. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you that. He was telling people, though, whoever would listen, that how depressed Gail was.
Oh, okay. Planting the seed.
Yeah. And Bob's father even let out an idea that maybe she committed suicide. I mean, she tried before.
Oh, that's just gross. Come on, guys. That is gross.
Yeah. But her family knew that she was planning a future.
Yeah.
She would not have done that. Sylvia told police that she just knew that Bob was hiding something. When Sylvia was talking to the police, she told Stephen, Gail's brother, to stay at the apartment in case anyone called. But she told him, while no one's there, go to Gail's bathroom. Ooh. And look for any clues, that's anything like suspicious.
Our kind of sleuthing.
I know.
Yeah.
The man that Gail was having an affair with did not waste any time going to the police. He told them that Bob had confronted him about the affair.
Oh, no.
Yeah. In an interview, Bob is asked, what do you think happened to your wife? And he responds with his head hanging, without eye contact, and shaking his head, no. I don't know. I don't know. I'm worried.
Yikes.
Mm-hmm. By the time Detective O'Malley interviewed Bob, he had already hired a lawyer. In the interview, Bob was asked about Gail's affair, and Bob said he had no idea of any affair. Mm. What are you talking about? Detective O'Malley basically says, well, that's a lie.
Yeah.
If you didn't know she was cheating, why would you go confront the man that she was cheating with?
I mean, that's a pretty easy lie to, like, prove.
Right. So Bob starts to sweat, and he turned pale. O'Malley raised the heat.
O'Malley, see? My name's O'Malley. I'm going to crack you open.
I love it. I love it. So he stands up and he shouts, why did you do it? And O'Malley knew he had him.
Yeah.
But Bob's attorney, they're sitting right there with him. He grabbed O'Malley by the arm and he shouts, stop! And he cut the interview. Now, Bob, he cut off all contact with police, with family, with friends. The guy just looks suspicious.
Yeah, that's the wrong way to go.
Yeah. People in the community were coming forward trying to help with tips. A man named Joel Davis said that he saw Gail in a local bagel shop the afternoon of her disappearance.
Oh.
This tip was debunked, though, because Joel said that the woman that looked like Gail and described her as having big breasts.
Oh my God, Joel, come on. It's like you couldn't have said she had brown hair just like Gail. You had to say she had big boobs.
Right.
Ay, Dios mio.
But I mean, everybody knew that Gail did not have big breasts.
I just don't know what to say right now.
So 2 months after Gail disappeared, Bob started dating.
Of course he did.
2 months.
Did he take her up in his plane?
He probably did, I think so. I don't know. But this was an anesthesiologist that worked at the hospital that he worked at, Dr. Roberta Karnofsky.
Okay.
He asked her to move into his apartment with him.
No.
So quickly. When Roberta saw Gail's things still in the apartment, she asked him, well, what do you think happened to your wife? And he said, I don't know. I think she's just walking around somewhere out there and she doesn't know who she is.
Okay. She's in a fugue state. She's walking around.
She's lost her mind.
I'm going to keep her stuff here. Mm-hmm. And like, you can move in, but if she comes back, I mean, what's going to happen then?
Right. Well, one night, police called Bob down to the station. They told him that they found a woman that looked like Gail wandering around. What?
What are the odds?
And Bob says, can this wait till tomorrow?
He's like, it can't be my wife because I killed her.
You're so funny, Candace. You're reading my notes.
And actually, like, I'm really busy right now. Oh, my. This guy.
Yeah. Well, he did end up going to the police station that night. And before he left, Roberta says, I have to leave. I can't be here when your wife is coming, if she's coming back home. Like you just said.
Yeah.
This.
And she's like totally practical. She's like,
you were playing the scenario out just now before I'm telling you. Yeah. So he tells Roberta, oh, don't worry. It's not going to be her.
Oh, that's chilling. Yeah. That is chilling.
Yeah. She was chilled to the bone. Yeah.
Can you
she,
imagine?
I know.
What do you mean by that?
She got really curious. Like, how does he know?
Oh, my gosh.
How does he know it's not going to be her? Like, huh? When Bob had left to go to the police station, she started looking through Bob's things.
I was literally thinking she probably was like, I'm going to play this cool.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go back into that apartment, see if I can find some.
Yes. And she did.
Roberta.
I know. So she found his flight log
and
saw that on July 7th, the day that Gail disappeared.
Oh, my God.
He had flown that day.
Okay. Okay. Carry on.
What was odd is that he changed one of the sevens to look like an eight. So it looked like he went flying on July 8th, not July 7th. But it was clearly like he changed that from a seven to an eight. And, like, that's when she gets this feeling in the pit of her stomach.
Oh, man.
Roberta was bold, let me tell you. One night at dinner, I mean, she stayed.
Oh!
And I don't know how many nights after all this, but they're sitting at dinner.
She's like, I'm gathering more intel.
Yeah, well, she brought up her suspicions to Bob.
Oh, no!
Yes, she did.
Roberta!
She told him, I think you killed your wife.
Ro-Ro! I can't believe you said that!
She says, I think you killed your wife. You chopped her up. You took her up in the airplane and you threw her out of the airplane. The only response he gave was silence and he hung his head. So Roberta gathered all of her things and she moved out. I don't know if she went to the police and was like, at this particular time, if she went directly to them or if she like stewed on it. I don't know how long. I know eventually she did go to the police, but I don't know how long it took her.
She's like, I'm going to get up now.
Yeah.
And I'm going to gather my things. And she was probably clenching her butt cheeks all the way to that door.
You would think so.
Holy crap.
Yeah. Girl. So meanwhile, Elaine, her Gail's sister, was diligently working hard. I mean, she sent letters to everyone in the apartment building and letters to all of Bob's colleagues asking for help with any information that they knew. Like,
and didn't Elaine know about the psychopath?
Oh, yeah. She knew everything.
Yeah.
I mean, Gail told her everything.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, Elaine just wanted the police to open a criminal investigation. Mm-hmm. And so she was like, asking anybody and everybody, if you've heard anything, has Bob said anything? Like, please tell me. Detective Andrew Rosenzweig?
I believe you.
I'm sorry if I'm saying that wrong. I mean, I know I'm saying it wrong. but he learned that Bob was a pilot somewhere in the investigation. So he started digging into that. He found an airfield in Caldwell, New Jersey, where Bob had rented a plane on July 7th. So, yeah, I'm assuming he did not have his own plane. He would go rent. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, he saw that he rented this plane on July 7th. Why did Bob never mention that he flew a plane from 4:30 to 6:30 that morning?
Right.
Learning this, they had the same suspicion that Roberta had.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay.
He dropped her out of the sky.
Yeah. They immediately asked to see the plane that he used, but there was no evidence that Gail was ever in that plane. I mean, by this time, it had already been a few months, mm-hmm. and the plane had already been cleaned.
Yeah.
Since this was all circumstantial, mm-hmm. no body, no evidence, detectives just felt stuck, feeling defeated without hard physical evidence. So jump to 1989, a female torso had washed up on the shore of Staten Island. An X-ray showed a previous break on one of the bones that matched a previous injury that Gail had.
That was years.
Yeah.
It had been there for years?
Yeah. Wow. Well,
I mean, it had been...
It just washed up. So four years. 4 years.
Holy moly.
I'm sure there was defects to it.
Do you know the condition it was in? I'm fascinated by this. Like, where was it lodged somewhere? And then just it like got jostled and... oh, man.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So I'll give you a little more on that later.
Because I want more of that. I need to know more about that.
I don't think you're going to be satisfied, though.
Oh, okay.
Just hold on to your panties, okay? Okay. Okay, so I'm not exactly sure what the condition of the torso mm-hmm. was. I'm sure it was swollen and all that.
So I'm wondering if it was like completely skeletonized or did it still have tissue on it after all those years?
I mean, I do know that it still had tissue on it.
It did after 4 years?
Mm-hmm. But they matched the bone of this wow. previous injury. So Gail's family was able to bury part of her sister's body.
Oh my God, that's horrifying.
I know. But they felt this sense of closure. Like
they could finally just say, okay, we know she's gone.
Right. And they had a place to put her sister mm-hmm. or their sister. Having proof that Gail, in fact, had been murdered, they thought for sure that now detectives can go further and get answers and possibly charge Bob.
Like, hello.
Okay. Let's do this thing.
Yeah.
1990, Bob moved to Las Vegas. He's like, I'm out of here. He joined a plastic surgery practice and was partying it up in Sin City.
As you do.
He would have about a year-long relationship with a Stephanie Youngblood. Yeah. Mm-hmm. A year-long. So tells you he was not charged. Right. Right away, Stephanie Youngblood commented on how for a while the relationship was blissful.
Huh. He's probably throwing money at her.
Yeah. But then the red flags started to show. He blew up in anger at her on a couple of occasions, and she insisted that he go to therapy. Get this.
What?
The therapist told Stephanie
no.
that it would be dangerous for her to stay in this relationship.
God almighty. I just.
Yeah. Jump. How many years do you think we're jumping?
Don't say 10.
Five. Half that.
Okay. I'll meet you at 5 then.
Jump 5 years to 1995. Bob went on a blind date with Carol Fisher. She cut to the chase.
She's like, I think you killed your
no,
wife.
No, listen to this. She cut to the chase and was asking him lots of questions like, what baggage does he have from the past? And
she's me on a first date. She's like, let's tell me all your dirty secrets.
I don't have time to waste.
Let's just get it over with.
When she asked him if he had ever been married, she could tell he really didn't want to answer this question.
Red flag number one.
Yeah. Well, to cut the awkwardness, she jokingly said, what did you do? Kill your wife? What? Like, where does that come from?
Girls.
Little did she know. So from there, it just got even more awkward. He turned pale and asked her, what do you know?
What? No, he didn't say that.
Yes.
He said, what do you know?
Yeah, she said he kept asking, like, what do you know?
What?
I don't know.
Oh my gosh. Be more obvious.
But y'all, Carol continued to date him for 6 months.
No, Carol.
She realized, I mean, she's like, I'm going to give him like, she seemed to be a quirky person.
Okay. She's like, this guy's a charity case. I'm going to see just how much work I can do here.
Well, 6 months, I mean, it didn't last long. Oh. She realized that she just couldn't get over his emotional issues.
Yeah. And he probably tried to drown her cat.
Yeah. Who knows? Just a few months later, Bob, he wanted to get married.
No. He wanted to care?
No.
Someone new?
Someone new.
Yikes, a bee.
A gynecologist this time.
Okay. Well.
Dr. Janet Cholet.
Okay.
But first, he would need Gail's death certificate.
Oh.
Yeah, he didn't have that.
About that.
So yeah, he had to get this death certificate before he could remarry.
Well, yeah. I mean, because he's still married, right?
Yes.
Like, technically.
Yeah. I mean, they did have the body, you know, and they buried her. So, I mean,
but yeah,
surely they had this death certificate on file, but he wasn't concerned with having all of that. Remember, right. He just, right after
he's like,
he moved. So, when the death certificate arrived in the mail, Janet opened up the envelope. And she read that the cause of death was homicide. Alarm bells were going off. Janet tried to end things with Bob, but he persuaded her to stay.
Oh, Lord.
Convincing her that he had nothing to do with her death. The two of them did marry and moved to Minot, North Dakota. He's just all over the place.
I mean, that's a far cry.
He found a plastic surgery practice to work for, and he started working with a group called Flying Doctors of Mercy.
Gross.
This was a group of doctors that would fly to Mexico and give free aid to the poor children in the area.
Oh, my God.
What a stand-up guy.
Oh, man. Atoning for your sins is a little late for that, sir.
Exactly. 1997, Detective Rosenzweig still had not forgotten about Gail.
Yeah.
He was ready to retire, but he wanted another look at her case. He's like, this is one that I have to solve before leaving. So he called Elaine and told her that he was reopening the case.
Nice.
Rereading that Gail's torso had been surgically cut from the rest of her body, he couldn't let go of the fact that Bob was a plastic surgeon and knew how to cut through a body.
Yeah, I'll say.
Reluctantly, Gail's family gave permission. Elaine and Steven, they're like, they really wrestled with it.
Mm, I bet. I bet that is so tough. Like, if we don't do this, we'll always wonder. But like, if we do this,
it's going to help get justice for her.
Oh, man. That's
so
tough.
Yeah, they did give permission for her body to be exhumed. Mm-hmm. When they got the initial test results, her family was very disappointed and hurt all over again. Detectives had to tell them that the torso did not belong to Gail.
Oh, my God. Elena, I did not expect you to say that.
I know. I had the same reaction when I was reading this.
Oh my.
I know. Heartbreaking.
Oh.
Their peace was taken away.
Oh my God. Oh.
Elaine told detectives that the only way that they can make this up to her and their family was to prosecute Bob. She's like, you better get this done. Detective Rosenzweig made this his mission.
Oh.
He started fresh and he went to interview Dr. Stone, the psychiatrist that suggested she leave.
That's where I'd start too.
Then detectives went to Las Vegas and interviewed Bob's friends and colleagues.
Girlfriends?
Oh, yeah. Just maybe he said dumb to them.
Oh.
They also spoke with Dr. Roberta Karnofsky.
Yeah.
She told them about the flight log that showed that Bob flew on July 7th. She explained that the log date had been altered. Detectives knew that they had they had to get this flight log.
Yeah.
Detective Rosenzweig went to North Dakota and confronted Bob there. He asked him to have an interview, and Bob refused to talk without his attorney. December 6th of 1999, Bob was finally indicted.
Amazing.
For Gail's murder. He turned himself in 2 days later. He's like, all right, the gig is up.
Jeez.
When Elaine saw Bob in the hallway at the courthouse, she walked up to him and she says, why don't you tell me that you didn't kill my sister? Come on, Bob. Like, say something to me.
Yeah.
And he wouldn't look at her. He turned, he walked away and got into the elevator and left.
Wow.
The trial began on October 2nd, 2000. He was ordered to provide the flight log. They could clearly see that he altered the 7 to the 8 to throw off the day. Elaine got on the stand and told of the abuse, everything that her sister had told her, including the time that Bob strangled Gail until she passed out, all because he caught her smoking. Can you imagine how liberating it was? How liberating it must have felt to Gail's sister to be able to tell Bob.
To air out his dirty laundry. Yes,
and to look at him and say, I know everything that you did.
Yeah.
And I'm telling everybody about it.
Mm-hmm.
The prosecution put together a videoed reenactment of how Bob put Gail's body in the plane and dropped her body from the air into the ocean. So this was... They're saying,
I am horrified by the thought. Like, I just,
They're saying, this is how we think he did it. And they like played out this whole video. Roberta got on the stand and talked about how she told Bob, I got to get out of here. Your wife is coming home. And he's like, you don't have to go anywhere. It's not her. He was too sure.
Mm.
Carol got on the stand and talked about her joke that she made on their first date and his response to it. The only witness that the defense had was Joel Davis, who said that who said that he saw Gail in the bagel shop. I mean, come on, that's your only witness you could call?
That's it. He should fire his attorneys. That's all you got?
I know. Seriously.
Come on.
So he still was talking about how voluptuous this woman was.
Oh, Joel. Please.
And the prosecution, they fired back with the photo of Gail in a bikini.
Yuck.
And you can clearly see that she's flat chested.
Poor Gail. She's being displayed in the courtroom like this. This is ridiculous.
The jury deliberated for a little over 5 hours and announced the guilty verdict.
Amazing.
He was sentenced to 20 years to life in prison.
Okay.
He actually was eligible for parole in 2021. Bob eventually confessed to Gail's murder at his parole hearing.
Like, I did not see that coming.
Yeah. At trial, like, he still was like,
wow. And all that time after.
Yeah.
Only just at his parole hearing.
Yeah. That's what I read anyway.
Jeez.
I'm taking that as fact.
I thought he was going to take that to his grave.
Right. And so did the prosecutors.
Yeah.
So he told the board, I wanted her to stop yelling at me and I attacked her. When asked how, Bob said he strangled her. And he went on to say, I went flying. I opened the door and then I took her body out of the airplane and dropped her into the ocean. He also told the board he killed his wife because he was immature and didn't understand how to deal with his anger. The prosecutors were shooketh.
And he's telling the story so that they'll grant him parole? Like, this is how he thinks he's going
to
get out?
So he's saying, I'm admitting it. I'm finally ready to...
I get mad at people and I want them to stop talking, I attack them and kill them.
I was immature then, but I'm more mature now, so you should let me out on parole. Come on.
I think it's pretty grown up to, like, take a dead body up in your plane and dump them out into the ocean. That's pretty adult kind of stuff.
Thank you, doctor.
Oh, my God.
So yeah, the scenario was exactly what the prosecution wow. thought and what they played out in this video. And he just admitted it.
Gosh.
His whoa. Request for parole. I mean, do I really have to say it? It was denied. Yeah, denied. Elaine also holds Bob accountable for the death of her parents. Her mother, Sylvia, died in 1990, just a couple whoa. Years later. Her father, Manny, died in 1995. She says they died of broken hearts.
Yeah.
Yeah. He broke their hearts when he killed their daughter. Mm-hmm. Gail's brother, Stephen, was only 15 when Gail was wow. when Gail disappeared. He says his mother took it especially hard, saying, "I never saw my mother happy ever again from 1985 until the day she passed away." Oh, so heartbreaking.
See the destruction.
Yeah.
Like just
no,
oh.
no care for anybody. Elaine now works with the Women's Justice Center, helping women who struggle with domestic.
We need someone fiery like her.
Yeah.
She is fiery.
Yes. And that's what's beautiful to see is her passion mm-hmm. for her sister and the hard work that Elaine has put into getting justice, and yeah. now she's helping these victims of domestic violence yeah. get justice as well. But she loved her sister so
yeah.
much. I mean, that's sisterly love yeah. right there. So that's all I have on Gail. But P.S. If you wondered, like I did, who did the torso really belong to?
I do wonder that.
Yeah. The torso belonged to Heidi Balch.
Heidi
Balch.
That sounds familiar.
She is the first victim to the serial killer, Joel Rifkin. There is a podcast called The Girlfriends that details the story. I haven't listened to it. Maybe I'll get into that whole story for one of our Patreons.
Please do.
But I did glance mm-hmm. at that whole thing mm-hmm. and it's a lot. So I'm going to wow. have to prepare myself. I think I'm going to have to wait a few weeks, especially after your three-parter.
Yikes. That was an atrocity,
yeah.
wasn't it?
Yeah. I can't be doing that just yet. So, yeah, we'll see.
Lena, that I was literally on the edge of my seat.
I know.
Like there were times where it was silence because I couldn't form
I know.
A response.
I know.
That is wild.
I know.
Oh my Lord, he dropped her from a plane. Oh, that's horrifying.
I know. And so now, I mean, there's still no body. She has never been recovered because she's in the ocean. And
I mean, I hope that she nourished a lot of sea life.
Yeah.
And I hope that her bones floated down and landed in a treasure chest.
Yeah. Yes, I love that.
What do you think?
Yeah.
Should we remember her like that?
I absolutely.
Mean, that's just the best way I can
yeah.
think that possibly happened after that.
I think that's a good way to end this
just
episode.
The way she overcame, like, I feel like she was gritty, like her sister. Like, she was like, okay, you know what? I attempted to take my own life. I'm moving on from this.
Yeah. And she went to get help.
She went to get help.
Yes.
And she overcame that.
Mm-hmm.
And for that to be exploited.
Yeah.
At the time of her death, that really pisses me off.
Yeah. Like, you're right. That is grotesque.
That's disgusting.
Mm-hmm. But so, yeah. Years later, this torso coming up, being washed up, and then it still has flesh on it. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah,
when you were asking me that, I was like,
I know.
Just hold on.
Yeah. You're like, shut up. I'll get to it. But I know. Cause like, it feels like a torso washing up would have flesh on it, would have tissue still on it. Because
right.
otherwise, why would it float up to the surface and wash up on the shore?
Right.
If it had no connective tissue, then it would just be bones and they would have.
Yeah, exactly.
Not been together. But yeah, no, I'm thinking like one of our victims in the most atrocious case we just covered a couple weeks ago. Like, he had so much alcohol in his system that it delayed his, his death. And then, like, the woman was buried and it kind of preserved her body. And so you kind of think, like, I wonder if this torso got lodged in, like, this
seaweed,
like, biodome of, like, all these weird plants that preserved it for years. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, no.
Weirder things have happened. I don't know.
I know. Yeah. But then you have to, then you're faced with the realization it wasn't her.
Ugh. Oh my God, that's so heartbreaking.
Yeah. And so I do kind of feel a responsibility to tell Heidi Balch's story, but give me a minute to get into it, okay?
Okay. I'll be waiting. I'll be waiting in the wings.
All right.
Well, thank you for telling that story. That was wild.
Yeah.
Wild. That was great. Let's do it again sometime.
Okay. Bye, y'all.
Bye, guys. Thank you for listening to Cousins on Crime. Get connected with us by becoming a free member on our Patreon. Or for just $5 a month, you'll have access to bonus episodes, discussion groups, and much more. If you can't afford $5 a month, we get it. Inflation, am I right? Please consider leaving us a positive review and rating wherever you listen.
And don't forget merch. Support our podcast and show the love by sporting t-shirts with our latest designs or grab an evidence bag to keep the chain of custody for all your valuables. Don't forget to follow our show on your favorite streaming app so you never miss an episode, and get photos and updates on our Instagram at Cousins on Crime Podcast or our Cousins on Crime Facebook page. Have a case suggestion? Email us at cousinsoncrime@gmail.com.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at kosai.org.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.